again, in painting, and as I keep stressing, painting in the Greek world did not really bear resemblance to the types of painting we associate with Greek vase painting, particularly the so-called black figure ware, which is really an incising, and the red figure ware of the 5th century BC. There have been some discoveries recently in Turkey, and these are in tombs, tumuli, from the 6th century BC, one outside of the modern town of Uşak, ancient Temenotherai. There's a burial complex, and another one in northeastern Lycia at Elmala. And there we have fresco paintings which show Greek influences very strongly, but also Anatolian and even in some cases Persian influences. And the painting shows remarkably naturalistic and idealized figures, the beginnings of what looks like perspective, and that is now being confirmed by later Greek paintings from northern Greece from the Macedonian tombs of the 4th century BC. And it seems in the Archaic Age that the Greeks had achieved this mastery in painting, and it was quickly transmitted across Asia Minor and adapted to the appropriate setting. At the same time, the East Greeks were also in the forefront of developing Greek literature. And as I have said many a time to my survey classes, that if one is thinking in terms of languages in the Western tradition in which more important great works have been written, however you want to offer them instruction, Greek still stands, both in its pagan and its Christian literature, as the most important language in the West. Its writings have endured down to this day, and there's a good reason for that. In several areas, the East Greeks made some important breakthroughs. The Homeric poems probably were put together on the shores of Asia Minor, and I discussed that in a previous lecture. Homer was associated with the city of Smyrna. But in the generations after Homer, a number of so-called lyric poets adapted the epic meters into the lyric meters that we still use today and devised a whole range of forms of poetry, which to the modern is very appealing because the poet, if not speaking as a true individual, at least assumes the persona of an individual and speaks to us directly, not as an anonymous figure of the community, but as an individual. And I always think of the lyric poets of the 7th and 6th century BC as somewhat as the literary mirror images of the tyrants in a strange way. If the tyrants were the individual par excellence in politics, usually taking the form of throwing the aristocracy and trying to make himself the leading figure of his home city, these lyric poets have that same sense that they're speaking as individuals. And again, the islands of East Greece and the cities of Ionia produced some of the most remarkable poets in this period. Archilochus, a poet from the island of Paros who was engaged in mercenary service, has left us fragments of his poems, a marvelous collection, including poems that he wrote in iambics to criticize his, he was jilted by his lover, a girl called Neobule, who rejected him because he was illegitimate by birth. And he also was a mercenary. Father intervened. She dumped him. And he claims that his poems were so critical for this action that Neobule hanged herself and the father went mad. And I think one of the insults was Neobule sleeps with a Sifnian frog, which apparently is the height of insult in early Greece. And Archilochus also leaves us a poem where he tells us he got himself into a battle against the Thracian barbarians and the hoplite line broke and he threw his shield away and he has a poem mocking, ha, 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 I can always buy a new shield. Now, you're not supposed to say that. I mean, you're supposed to stand in the hoplite line like a good citizen and fight to the very end. When the battle went against you, of course everyone dropped their shields and ran, but you don't write a poem about it. Archilochus does. And it goes to show how the Archaic Age sees these poets standing forth and talking about situations and human conditions quite different from what we would have expected in the more traditional society of Homer, where heroic values and institutions are upheld, and where if you want any kind of comedy or foil, you go and look at the stories of the gods. Sappho and Alcaeus, both of them writing on the island of Lesbos at the city of Mytilene, composed a remarkable set of elegies. Sappho, her musings about her students. She was training a school of girls from aristocratic families. Her colleague Alcaeus, largely writing political invective against various tyrants. When one of these tyrants was overthrown, I think we have a fragment that says something to the effect, "Merciless is dead is dead. Let's get out and go, let's go out and get drunk," which is the start of a poem explaining how the tyrant had been overthrown.